Hello, everyone. I'm Clem Carl. I'm from Boston University. I'll be talking about our work on multi-energy X-ray computed tomography for explosives detection. This is work of our student, Lamore Eager, and our collaborators, Sinho Do and Homer Pien from MGH, and Prakash Ishwar, my colleague from Boston University. So a quick overview. In finding explosive materials, like at the airport, I'm sure we've all experienced having our bag scanned, you can discriminate materials using multi-energy X-ray computed tomography. The X-ray buys you the ability to look inside things without unpacking them. Our focus is on the so-called attenuation versus energy curves of materials. I'll describe those in a bit. And our interest is in taking a learning-based perspective, seeing what the data tells us about this problem. We'll study the dimensionality and the span of the set of curves that define materials, and we'll look at what happens when we build classifiers using different choices of feature sets. What I hope to convince you is that there's the potential for improvement over existing methods in these techniques by taking a learning-based perspective, and I hope to show that using different choices of features than the conventional choice can potentially buy you something, and using more features than the conventional choice of two features can potentially buy you something. So a little bit of overview of explosive detection by multi-energy X-ray CT. So computed tomography lets you look inside things without opening the bags and taking everything out. So CT buys you the ability to penetrate materials. Multi-energy CT buys you the ability to discriminate different material types. So you can kind of think of it as a spectrographic type of analysis. The focus of this work that I'll talk about today is what the fundamental information available in these kinds of measurements is. And again, to try to take a learning-based perspective, try to see what data or measurements of this type has to say about our ability to discriminate materials, and to try to focus a bit on what the best choice of features is if you know you want to do material discrimination, not just make pictures. So here I have a color-coded X-ray picture to give you the idea. Here's the kind of thing you see in the airport. And this is the kind of thing that is typically done now, where there's two features that are extracted and you try to cluster materials in this two-dimensional feature space. Okay, a little bit of physics so we understand where the information is. So X-rays, well, anytime you do X-ray CT, of course, the modality is X-ray based, and so the interaction of X-rays with materials is where the information is going to come from. The key quantity for us is what's called the linear attenuation coefficient, or the LAC, which is denoted by this symbol mu of E up here. Basically, mu of E tells you about the number of photons that are lost as they propagate through material, and that comes through physics from Beer's law, which is down here. If you put a number of photons, I0, into a homogeneous material of length L, there's the L, the number of photons that come out follows this law, I0 e to the minus mu e of L, and the number of photons lost is given by this parameter slash function mu of E. The thing to note is that mu of E depends on the photon energy. So if you put in photons of different energies here, the attenuation will be different depending on the energy of those photons. So this mu of E defines a curve, mu in this axis. Here's some of these curves over here. Mu in this axis, energy or E on this axis, which defines the attenuation as a function of energy. So you can see that for most materials, lower energy photons are absorbed at a higher rate than high energy photons. And so each material has a curve of this sort. So here's the curve that you'd see for lead. Here's the curve you'd see for, say, water. And there's another curve for honey. And so when you do X-ray-based interrogation of materials, what you really are getting at is the differences in these curves. That's how the materials impact the measurement. And you can see there's some interesting features. Some of these curves have discontinuities called K-edges that occur at different locations. And so the basic idea is from measurements, X-ray measurements, what we want to do is associate the X-ray measurements with this LAC, these curves, and with the LAC we can associate with materials. So that's kind of the picture of where we're going to go. Okay, now what's typically done in X-ray-based, multi-energy X-ray imaging is that the linear attenuation coefficient is assumed separable in space and energy. And so these mu's, these functions, are a function of both space and energy. And we do some type of decomposition where we split off the energy part from the spatial part. And so the spatial part is the volumetric thing that tells you the distribution of materials. We decide on some energy functions that describe the space of these curves. And then the goal is from the X-ray measurements to find these coefficients, AK. So here's sort of a notional diagram of that. The mu E, the energy curve, is decomposed in this picture into two different functions. This is a common standard choice of functions using the so-called photoelectric function and the Compton function. And so you write the overall attenuation curve as some coefficient times this curve plus a different coefficient times this curve. And you try to find these coefficients, AP and AC. So more generally, you get to pick these functions, and you try to find these coefficients. So overall, again, the picture to have in your head is that at the end of the day, you try to find these coefficients, say a vector of coefficients, and those vector of coefficients define the material. Okay, now, historically, the medical world sort of drove this kind of multi-energy X-ray work. And in the medical world, the kinds of things you're looking at are the body, biological tissues. And the universe of biological kind of materials is relatively small. Mostly we look like water, maybe we have bone. And in that domain, it was shown that the space of materials was well represented as two-dimensional. And the particular two-dimensional functions that were originally proposed were the photoelectric and the Compton functions. And so the world kind of evolved along on this two-dimensional viewpoint. And the choice of basis being either focused on photoelectric and Compton basis functions, and sometimes people choose another two basis functions that are based on their application in the medical world. They'll pick sort of extremal things like soft tissue and bone. But the space is generally a two-dimensional space, and since they know that the functional space, the spanning space is two-dimensional, that leads to scanners that only exploit two energy spectra in the scanning. So you sort of take measurements at two energies, you try to extract these coefficients for these two functions in a two-dimensional space. And this is propagated into the security domain, where it's dominated by dual energy machines trying to extract two-dimensional features and displaying them in a two-dimensional space and trying to do clustering. But if you think about the security domain, the space of materials is much greater than in the biological space. I mean, it's in essence anything you can think about putting into a suitcase. And so you have much less control about what goes into the scanner, and the universe of materials is much greater. So perhaps it shouldn't be surprising that you might expect that the dimensionality of the space might increase. Okay, so whoops. So this is what our hypothesis is that we might want to be interested in higher dimensional features, a higher dimensional spanning space, and in perhaps different features than this photoelectric and Compton expansion set or the corresponding coefficients. Okay. Now, there's an additional piece here, and that's that rather than imaging, the medical world is always focused on imaging, is in explosives detection, we're interested more in discrimination. It's not so much making the picture, it's more or less saying, look, do you have something that's going to explode in the bag? And so for that, we're trying to get these features that we're going to be using to do classification. Now, let me go back for a minute to the X-ray sensing. So there's this process where the material, the bag, the body, whatever, is in the scanner. You're going to take a bunch of these projection measurements, and from that, at the end of the day, you're going to try to estimate these coefficients, these AK and the expansion function. So at a high level, we can kind of view the left-hand side as the measurements, projection measurements, and there's some nonlinear, perhaps messy, line integral, tomographic kind of measurement. And so there's some nonlinear transformation of the thing that you want, these coefficients that define the material, perhaps spatially distributed across the volume. So for our purposes, we're going to take this abstracted view of the tomographic problem. You get measurements, and from those, you're going to try to extract these AKs. The AKs are what fundamentally define the material, okay, through this equation, this expansion. So if you change the basis expansion, when you try to estimate these AKs, you're changing the feature space. And so the viewpoint we have is this, is that choosing these basis is really the choice of the classification space. In the work that we're going to do, we're going to suppress the worry about tomography. We're going to focus on the basis choice. Okay, so that's this work. So here again, notionally, I've kind of described that. Here's a bunch of explosive materials, class 1. Here's a bunch of non-explosive potential confusers, class 0. Each of these explosive materials has some LAC associated with it. The non-explosive ones have some LAC. So there's a universe of LACs over here, a different universe of LACs over here. And what we're going to want to do is choose these expansion things, basis functions, so that the coefficients, which are our features, help us in doing discrimination between the two classes. Okay, now the approach that we've taken initially is just to take a universe of these. We take a bunch of labeled samples, some explosive, some non-explosive. We discretize them, and we stick them as columns into a matrix. So we have the TNT LAC, the Honey LAC, all the way up to the RDX LAC. So we have material along this axis. We have the values of the curves at different energies coming down along each column. And then we apply singular value decomposition analysis. And what we're going to do is look at these functions, the singular value functions, and different combinations of them as different choices of subspaces that we can extract features from. And we're going to look at the singular values to tell us about the relative importance of these different features. Okay? Okay. So experiments. So experiment number one is trying to make a move towards understanding the space of explosive materials, both the dimensionality and sort of what it might look like. So the first thing you can do, well, first let me tell you the experiment. We took 84 explosives, 40 non-explosives. We discretized them to 141 energy levels. So each LAC is essentially now 141 dimensional vector. And we stack them up in this matrix and we do SVD. Oh, I forgot to add. We discretize them over the essentially the diagnostic range from 10 keV up to 150 keV, and that's typically the range that gets measured in a CT machine. And we applied the SVD. So over here, I have the singular values ordered as a function of index. And again, I go back to remember the conventional approach says that that space of materials is well characterized as a two-dimensional subspace. Okay, so you should only need two functions to span it. So if that was true, the SVD analysis should show only two large singular values, and then the rest should be insignificant. But as you can see, there's one up here. There's two, three, four, five, six, seven. You can see that this thing isn't one or two and then dropping down to zero. It actually rolls off relatively slowly, and it looks like, based on this analysis, there's significantly more than two dimensions to the feature space of at least explosive materials. These aren't biological anymore. So this was our first interesting result. That says that, maybe we want to use a larger than a two-dimensional space. The other thing is if you think, okay, maybe I can well approximate it by the first two singular values. Those first two singular functions corresponding to these first two singular values are shown here. And just for reference, I put the standard two functions, the Foto-Compton functions, down here. You'll notice these are very smooth, two smooth functions to represent materials. The first two singular functions are not very smooth. They have these discontinuities. But remember, a lot of these materials can have things like these K-edges, discontinuities. So this was another interesting observation. The other thing you might say is, okay, two functions, they look different, but maybe they span the same space. But even that's not true. If you look at the angle between the subspace spanned by the first two singular functions and the subspace spanned by the Foto-Compton functions, the angle between them is 68 degrees. So it's not like they're the same functions. Okay, so there's a lot of difference here. Okay. Our second experiment was to look at the effect of feature dimensionality on classification performance. So we have the same setup as before, the same universe of explosives and non-explosives, the same discretization, the same stacking into the SVD. Okay. And what we did here was we looked in order at the singular values and the singular vectors. We divided the data randomly into an 80% training, 20% test set. And then for different numbers of features going in order according to the SVD, we trained a classifier and then tested the performance of the classifier. So we only picked, say, one feature, the first singular function, used that. Then we used 1 and 2. Then we used 1, 2, and 3, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And we repeated this for different numbers of features. And then we looked at what happens to the classification performance as you increase the dimensionality of the space in which you represent these things. Okay, so you can see what happens here, and we did cross-validation on this. So if you start with 1, your performance is down here. 1 and 2, your performance is down here. As you go to 3, it improves. 4, 5, 6, it jumps up. And when you get to 7 or 8, it jumps up, and then it seems to level off. So this axis is about 65% correct classification. Up here, we're at 85% correct classification. So this seems to suggest that there's some dramatic room for improvement by increasing the dimensionality of the feature space that you represent materials in, at least for explosives detection. And this is sort of counter to conventional wisdom, which has always been focused on a two-dimensional feature space centered around photoelectric and Compton. Okay, our third experiment, so those features were chosen in order. So when we chose two features, we chose the largest two singular values. What we did next was we fixed the number of features, i.e. the dimensionality of the space, to be 2, the same as the Foto-Compton choice. But now we looked at different combinations of singular functions, and we tried to see what happened as we went through all the different pairs you could imagine. So essentially, we're comparing different choices of two-dimensional feature space. So the dimensionality is fixed, but we're looking over the different subspaces now. Okay, so the same setup, same explosives, same non-explosives, same cross-validation, 80-20 split, and all of that. So here are the choices that we made. So this is singular functions 1 and 2, 1 and 3, 1 and 4, 2 and 3, 2 and 4, 3 and 4. Over here to the right is the performance of the photo-Compton choice, this particular conventional two-dimensional feature space. And we can see that the conventional two-dimensional photo-Compton choice of the two-dimensional feature space gives you about 66% correct classification. As you go through these different pair choices, lots of them are very similar, but this one, 1 and 4, seems to perform much better. So this seems to suggest that, again, even if you want to limit yourself to a two-dimensional feature space, that the conventional choice of photo-Compton may not be the best, and that there might be room in a classification context to optimize this choice to get better classification of particular focus classes of materials than has been carried over traditionally from the medical world. Okay, so our conclusions here in this initial work is that, well, we studied this problem on material classification from X-ray-based LAC features, okay? We took a learning-based approach. We used actual curves of materials, and we said, what does the data tell us about this? We kind of took a first principles approach, look at the dimensionality of the space, looked at the choice of the space, and tried to see whether there was room for improvement. And our initial results seem to suggest that there's the potential for improvement, both in terms of increasing the dimensionality and in optimizing the choice for any given dimensionality. So this was initial work. We limited ourselves to SVD analysis. What we've been working on since the time we did this is trying to break out of that SVD paradigm, because there's nothing that says that the SVD-based singular functions are the right functions to represent things. And so we've been sort of trying to push this forward. Thank you.
You only talk about average correct classification rate.
Yeah.
I would have thought that, you know, using hypothesis testing language, the probability of false alarm and probability of detection are probably not of equal importance. I mean, incorrectly classifying something as explosive is probably not the same importance as missing an explosive.
Yeah, there's lots of choices you can do, and indeed we're working up some of that stuff. I mean, we've done some additional work in doing things. So this picks a particular classifier, an SVM-based linear kernel classifier, and then looks at correct classification for that classifier. We've also done work on just basically what's the choice of things that sort of has the most information in. So one way you can measure that is, for example, area under the ROC. Other things you can do are you can fix false alarm rates and look at PD. We've been playing with all of that. So, you're right. I agree with you. This is just the preliminary work.
On the second to last slide, one and four seems to work a lot better than the others.
Yes.
Is the fact that that's such an outlier, is that an intuitive result for you?
Not at all. I mean, first of all, the SVD features, you know, the singular functions you get aren't physically based. So there's nothing, I mean, we've looked at them. You saw the first two. There's nothing that jumps out that says these look like certain materials, for example. So no, I would say nothing intuitive about that result, to me at least. Yeah.
Doing a decomposition on exponential decaying functions. Am I correct?
On the functions, they're not necessarily exponentially decaying.
Yeah, but on the known set.
They generally have that property,
okay.
Yes.
Have you thought of utilizing other functions? Because some of the ones you showed have discontinuities, and discontinuities are not well expressed in that type of functions.
Yeah, maybe I'm misunderstanding your question. I mean, those curves are what they are for materials. What
right.
we did was we stacked them up and did an SVD. So the singular functions of that universe are just going to be what they are. They're not parametrically being parametrically represented.
No, I thought you were parametrically representing
them. No, it's a discretized world, so they just turn out to be what they are. I'm running out of time. I'm past
okay.
my time.
All right.
But
we'll talk after.
Okay.
All right.